Gentlemen, please remind me to immediately start looking for new work if Kelly Kirsch ever gives me a vote of confidence. If Kirsch ever fires off an email to us and say, oh yeah, Pat's fine. He's in great shape. No need to worry about Pat's job. Just encourage me to go look for new work. Because it seems like in any line of work, if you get that vote of confidence, it's actually the exact opposite of that. Now, I understand. Usually when somebody has to come out and give a vote of confidence, it means that things aren't going so well. Like, usually if you're winning a bunch of cups or a bunch of president's trophies, you know, usually people aren't asking about the future of the head coach. So that's why it seems like any time a GM or an owner gives somebody a vote of confidence that, you know, it's not that long until afterwards they're fired. Because usually when that vote of confidence is given, the team isn't doing so well. But I don't know if it's usually 2 weeks between. That's exactly what we saw today in Buffalo. I was not expecting to wake up and see Jason Botterill fired by the Buffalo Sabres. Fired today after being told that he will return next season. Kim Pegula, one of the two owners of the Buffalo Sabres, well, the wife of Terry Pegula and the VP of the Buffalo Sabres, comes out last week, says he will return next season. That is what we found out 2 weeks ago. I remember asking Chris Johnston a question about it, and we were like, okay, well, Jason Botterill's back, going to continue the plan that he has enacted, whether you think it's successful or not, going back to May of 2017. And Kleiner, I don't necessarily disagree with the decision to go in a different direction from Botterill, because I don't think he's done a significantly strong job at the helm. It's more about saying he's coming back 2 weeks ago, like coming out publicly. Kim Pegula says he's coming back 2 weeks ago. And then they fire him 2 weeks later. It's not even like there's been hockey played in the last 2 weeks. And then they replace right. replace him with a guy who has zero general manager experience. It's not even like they had an AGM waiting in the wings who was one of the up-and-comers, or they had somebody who was out of work with plenty of GM experience waiting in the wings. Kevin Adams was a decent NHLer, but he has 2 years as an assistant coach, like 7 years ago. And he has no hockey personnel management experience to speak of. And this is the guy they replace Jason Botterill with. It just, again, in a bubble, going in a different direction from Botterill, yeah, I could see why that makes sense. In the world that is the farce of the Buffalo Sabres, however, it's a little harder to understand what exactly they're doing and what direction they're going. I mean, even in a year when they're letting almost anyone into the playoffs in the NHL, 24 teams are going to have a realistic shot of making the playoffs this year. Even Montreal and Chicago are getting this lifeline to maybe be a playoff team. Even then, Buffalo couldn't make the cut. This organization is kind of a joke, and the clown show continues with the news of today.
Yeah, and the thing that I don't get about this whole situation is, like you said before, nothing's changed. Like, and it's not even just like, oh, well, they were 500 for a little bit. But, like, did he have a background on a Zoom meeting that didn't fit what the Buffalo Sabres are trying to do? Like, there's nothing he could have done in the last 2 weeks, or really even the last 3 months, that would say, okay, now is the time we need to make this change. And for sure, yeah, got a bit of time to do a bit of a GM search, to need to rush out. Like, I'm going to suggest, all due respect to all parties involved, Kevin Adams is probably going to be available 2 weeks from now. Like, if you wanted to do even a bit more of an extensive search, I think the guy is going to be there. So this one makes absolutely no sense to me. Do I think Botterill's done an all right job? No. Like, the team sucks. Their star player is very unhappy with the direction of the franchise, so things probably need to change. I just don't get why it needed to be today. Like, what in-depth knowledge have they picked up over the last couple of weeks that would lead us to this decision today?
Yeah, I don't understand how the Sabres came to this call. And again, firing Jason Botterill, some of the Sabres fans have been calling for months, weeks, years. They're not happy with the job that he's done. And on top of that, the reaction to when the Pegulas came out and said 2 weeks ago that he's coming back was not very strong. Like, people were very against that decision. But it's to do that and then to change your mind completely,
not even like they demoted him. They just straight up reversed course and fired him 2 weeks later and replaced him with a guy. Look, I've got nothing against Kevin Adams. I listened to a good chunk of the Zoom call they did with the Pegulas, Ralph Krueger, and new GM Kevin Adams. I got nothing against the guy. I don't know him. I know that he was a decent NHLer who got more than 500 NHL games in. I can't speak to him as a coach because it's been almost a decade since he coached in the league. But he was working in business operations. Like, to your point, Kleiner, I think he would have been around had they, if they were like, okay, this is the internal candidate we want, but we want to go and see if there's maybe some external candidates that we could potentially go. Maybe they revisit Craig Conroy. Conroy was in the mix. I think Craig Conroy is one of the hottest potential GM candidates out there, and he was in the mix going back a couple of years ago. I think, you know, what about Brad Pascal? Brad Pascal's been an AGM in the, maybe they went and looked like guys like that, Conroy and Pascal, both guys who have now been AGMs for a long time, both pretty hot names on the front burner when it comes to GM candidates elsewhere. Other teams have got guys like that. Why didn't they go potentially knock on some doors there? It's a strange one to me. It really is. And I'm not certain if you're a Sabres fan that you can be overly confident about the direction your team is going, even if they've got, I believe, the right coach for the job. I think Ralph Krueger is 100% the right guy to be able to lead that team. But you still have to have a direction from the top. And here's the problem. So many people have speculated that this decision by the ownership group, the decision to move away from Jason Botterill, is because there is too much pushback from the general manager, whether he's done a good job or not, too much pushback on hockey issues, which is what he's paid to have purview over, too much pushback there, and there's a lot of speculation that they want somebody who will be a little more passive when it comes to them being involved in hockey operations. They're the billionaires. Like, the Pegulas are the ones with the dough. They're the ones who own the team. They can do whatever the hell they want with it. However, if I'm a Sabres fan, looking at my team with 9 straight years out of the playoffs, having not won a playoff series in some people's lifetimes, it's not a good time to be a Sabres fan, and I don't know if it really feels like it's looking up right now. I know that attendance has been dropping there. That is a team that has got a rabid group of fans, and they want to love their team so bad. Just look at when they went on that 10-game win streak last season. Not this past season, but the year before, and how ramped up that place was, and how much Sabres fans were into that. Sabres fans are awesome, and they want to have a team to cheer for, but it's tough to cheer for your team right now.
Well, and just look at now, there's a bit of a format shift in the NHL with how they did divisions. But since their last postseason appearance, here's how they finished in the division. The last 2 years of the Northeast, 3rd and 5th. And then since the switch to the new format with the new divisions, 8th in the Atlantic, 8th in the Atlantic, 7th in the Atlantic, 8th in the Atlantic, 8th in the Atlantic, 6th. This is a bad hockey team. And has been a bad hockey team for a long time. And that is, it's such a tough market to basically drive fans away in. What we've seen with the Sabres, with the Bills. This is a fan base that will support you through thick and thin. And to be driving them away, that is just an impressive amount of incompetence, really. And to be in this situation now, if I'm a Sabres fan, I'm looking, okay, just spent a bunch of money on Jeff Skinner, who didn't do a whole lot. You have a star player who doesn't really want to be there from the sounds of it, and still like $6 million in Kyle Okposo. Like, there isn't a ton to get super excited about. And I can understand not wanting Botterill going into this fairly important offseason. It's just the whole thing just reeks of desperation and kind of incompetence, really.
So since 2012, which was the first year of this 9 straight years the Sabres have missed the playoffs, since 2012, they've drafted 12th overall, 8th overall, 2nd overall, 2nd overall, 8th overall, 8th overall, 1st overall, and 7th overall. Every single year since the first year that they have missed the playoffs outside of 2012, and for the last 8 drafts in a row, they've drafted inside the top 8. And Rasmus Ristolainen's an NHLer. Sam Reinhart's an NHLer. Alexander Nylander's no longer with the organization. Casey Mittelstadt, we don't know. Rasmus Dahlin's in the NHL. and Dylan Cousins we still wait on. But when you look at what this team has done with their draft picks, they haven't done enough. Yes, Jack Eichel's a superstar, and they got that right at number two, in the easiest number two. Has there ever been an easier number two overall pick? Like, it was so set in stone, McDavid and Eichel were going 1-2 in 2015. Otherwise, we'll see what Dahlin turns into, but have the Sabres turned their picks into true core pieces? Like, Sam Reinhart has turned into a pretty decent NHLer and looks like he continues to take steps, but are we talking about a core piece that is an untouchable and that every team in the league would build around? Probably not. You're right. So, like, this team has done, whether it was Jason Botterill or the GMs before him, Tim Murray, the final years of Darcy Regier, so on and so forth, this team just has not been able to get out of their own way. And to your point, that's not an easy market to drive people away. And I wonder, you know, Jack Eichel has been extremely vocal over the last couple of years about how dissatisfied he is with how things have gone from a hockey standpoint. Like, if you're Eichel, how much longer can you take playing in Buffalo? You've got the hammer. Yes, you signed your long-term deal, but if you ask for a trade, they got to trade you. And if he wants out, he'll get his way out, and he'll get to a spot that is maybe a little more conducive to winning. The guy hasn't sniffed the playoffs. Everybody talks about, remember, even last season, people were talking about how, well, I wonder when Connor McDavid asks out of Edmonton. McDavid's at least won a playoff round, and right. He's going to get back to the playoffs this year, and things have not been rosy, and it has not been a largely successful tenure since McDavid entered the league, but like, he looks like a three-time cup champion compared to what Eichel has done sniffing the playoffs. Guy hasn't come close. It's not a criticism on Eichel. The guy's turned into a superstar, but if I'm him and I made that commitment, 8 years at $10 million to sign with the Sabres, and nothing seems like it's looking up and it just continues to be a joke of a clown show, when do you decide to ask out if you're him? I can't imagine that if it continues this way much longer, he's going to want to be there much longer.
Yeah, and this is a very important offseason for the Buffalo Sabres, and we've said it for a little bit, even before all of this was going on, but they basically have like four forwards under contract going into next season. So this is right into the fire for Kevin Adams, because if you screw this particular offseason up, I think this is the last, from the sounds of it anyway, this is the last year Jack Eichel is going to take any of this. And I get it's a big cap hit, but there are 30 teams in the NHL that would make it work.
Oh, absolutely. Like, Jack Eichel is a franchise player that you build around, and he's only getting better. He has taken significant steps in every one of the last few seasons. He entered the league as an impact player. He was absolutely a beast, and I think deserves some fringe Hart Trophy consideration, because where would the Sabres be without that guy? Like, they might be scraping 31 in the league without Jack Eichel. It was similar to last year's argument about McDavid for the Hart. Where would the Oilers be without McDavid, despite not even coming close to the playoffs last year? Where would they be without McDavid? So it's kind of similar to Jack Eichel. I don't think he'll be a finalist for the Hart Trophy, and I don't think he should be, but I think he deserves at least some conversation on it. Here's a few of the texts, 960-960. Somebody goes, thank goodness they didn't get Conroy. Conroy would be in a bad spot. He was in the running. He was one of the finalists for the Sabres job when they hired Botterill. I don't know how many people are going to have success in Buffalo. What else we got here? Do you ever think that Calgary and Buffalo could get together to make a deal for Eichel? Price would be high, but watching McDavid and Eichel battle for the near future would be pretty amazing. I mean, I don't know what Eichel would take. I don't know exactly how that would work, but if they could get together, that would be the number one center that Flames fans have been looking for you know, the last two decades. No knock on Sean Monahan, who I think is a great player, but Jack Eichel's a bona fide, no questions asked, number one center in this league. Yeah, if the Flames were able to get him, I think that most would endorse it. I don't know how many Flames fans would be like, yeah, no, don't go get Eichel. That's too high a price to pay for that elite center. I'll say this much, to your point, Klein, there would be 30 teams interested in him. And maybe you can take the Pittsburghs and the Edmontons and a few of the other teams who have their superstar centers already. You might take them out of the conversation, but there'd probably be like 25, 26 teams legitimately knocking on Buffalo's door with legitimate offers to bring that guy in. Because unless you draft a number one center, and unless you get him and grow him in your organization, guys like that do not come open on the open market very often. John Tavares, Joe Thornton. Who else? Like, nobody else has come available as a number one center in the last 15 years. Are those the only two guys I can think of? And maybe I might be missing one or two. But the point is, they're an extremely rare commodity to actually be able to find outside of drafting him. And we know that drafting is not an exact science. So, if Calgary, if Eichel was on the market and Calgary could get him, I'd say, yes, push all in and do everything you can to get Jack Eichel, much like I would say that would be the case for about 24 or 25 other NHL teams.
Yeah, and honestly, even Pittsburgh and Edmonton, they'd at least call. Like, hey, what's it going to take? Let's just kick the tires on old Kev Adams here. Let's see what he wants in this, especially Jim Rutherford, who's the most active GM in the last 20 years.
What else we got here? Buffalo trying to out-oiler the Oilers. Not really Botterill's fault that Jeff Skinner forgot how to score goals. This reads, I don't know if this would get it done. Eichel and Ristolainen for Monahan, Giordano, Pelche, and a first. I think you might have to add a little bit more. Oof. Like Giordano, who will be 37 next year, Monahan for Eichel, Pelche. Like Pelche, a first, a second, and Monahan might be just in the conversation to get Eichel. Like, to move a guy of that caliber, if the Sabres ever went down that road with some cost certainty, and let's be honest, the $10 million, he's looking more and more like a bargain based on NHL salaries today, which he's a part of escalating, but that's a different story. You're probably going to have to break the bank and then some to bring that guy in. Like, multiple firsts and a prospect and an impact player on your team, it would, you know, just to make things work, you'd probably be talking about Monahan, a couple of firsts, and that's what it would take to get Eichel, if that would even get it done, and there'd be a ton of competitive offers to get that bad boy done.
Yeah, I think Monahan, Gio, Pelche, and a first, you're sniffing around maybe Eichel. I don't know if Eichel and the 25-year-old top four defenseman would really work in that.
No, I mean, I'm not a big Ristolainen guy. I think Ristolainen is a bit of a bust. He's a full-time NHLer. Is he a good defenseman? Is he a guy that you'd build around? Probably not, but I still think that that's not going to get it done. As a Sabres fan, that isn't close. Try Monahan, Valimaki, and multiple firsts as a starting point. See, like, I feel like that's a little bit more in the neighborhood. Or this one, as Wedley writes in, Jankowski in a third. I mean, it gets to the center. Oof. And a pick.
Yeah,
maybe we should give
former
a little
first
more
round
to
pick.
That. Yeah, exactly. They're both former first rounders, both former top 21ers. I mean, I don't know how you can go wrong with that.
Throw in the compensation pick if they get one from the Oilers too. Just, you know, a little cherry on top.
We welcome you to the program. I have no idea what the Buffalo Sabres are doing. We'll get more on that in just a few minutes with our NHL insider Chris Johnston. No, they don't. I don't think they know what they're doing either. It's Pat Steinberg, Peter Klein, Logan Gordon, along with you, Logo, and I here at our Sportsnet 960 Downtown Studios. Kleiner at Shea Klein. We've actually seen a solid amount of NHL news the last couple of days. I mean, this one is the blockbuster, the Botterill news, but Flames made a minor signing yesterday, getting Artem Zagadoulin locked up for another year. We don't have a ton of time, and I'll ask Chris Johnston about this in a few minutes, but I wanted to get your thought on this. Ryan Reeves very quietly re-ups in Vegas yesterday, pending unrestricted free agent, signs for two more years for the Golden Knights, $1.75 million per. I wonder how many more pending UFAs we see sign between now and whenever the NHL restarts, or between now and July 10th, or even between now and July 1st, when contracts are officially set to expire, which is still something the NHL needs to figure out. But I wonder how many guys sign for the next year or two, just so they can give themselves a little peace of mind. Because if you are a pending unrestricted free agent going into an unprecedented NHL restart after almost 5 months not playing, I wonder about the injury risk. And if you're a pending UFA, the injury risk going into a year where you don't have a contract, that's a scary situation. So I even apply it to here in Calgary with Hamonic or Brody or Gustafson or Forbort or some of the other UFAs this team has, even Cam Talbot. Like, if you're one of those guys and you're a little leery about potentially getting injured and then not getting a lot of bites whenever this year's free agency period opens, do you sign for a year? Do you sign for a couple of years just to give yourself that peace of mind and to know that you're covered for next year, and then you can go into free agency under more normal circumstances? I wonder how many UFAs start to think about doing that here in the next number of weeks.
Yeah, for Reeves, it was a little easier because I don't think he was expecting a raise on 2.75 if the situation were normal. So I think it's a bit of an easier one. But guys in that tier, for sure, I think it makes a lot of sense. Get locked in. And for teams, get your bottom six or bottom pair defensemen. Get that kind of locked down and get that cost at least certain so that you know how many chips you have to play with once we figure out how low the salary cap can go. So no, I think you're right. I think we're going to see quite a few of these. I don't know if it's going to be in the Brody Hamonic tier, but definitely.
What tier do you put them in? Kind of the second tier of free agents?
Yeah, second. Certainly at least a tier or two above Ryan Reeves, but definitely not in the upper echelon. But I think guys in the Ryan Reeves area and probably a tier up, it makes a ton of sense for them right now to just get that locked in. And even from a Hamonic Brody perspective, a one-year contract just to see the lay of the land, I don't think it's a bad idea for them.
Well, and like, look, Travis Hamonic has never played more than 74 games in an NHL season. The guy plays a brand of hockey that gets him hurt. And mm-hmm. he was just coming, like, he's already missed 20 games this year. He was just coming off an injury. He was maybe able to return against his former team in the game, the first game that got canceled. We were expecting Hamonic to be back against the New York Islanders on the Thursday the NHL season got put on pause. But he's already missed 20 games this year. And for Hamonic to, at some, especially in you know, all out, everything on the line, best of five play-in and playoff rounds, for him to get hurt in the postseason or in this play-in round against the Jets, is that going to stun anybody? Just the way he plays, it wouldn't shock me. So if you're Hamonic, do you want to risk that without having a contract for next year? I mean, yes, it's the difference between entering free agency at 29 as opposed to 30, and that's not insignificant, but what's more important, entering the free agency period and maybe getting a big deal at a certain age, or having some certainty for next year and knowing that you're under contract? If you could sign at 1x4 if you're Hamonic for next year, just to know that you've got another year under your belt for sure, and then you can enter a more normal free agency period next summer, might make a lot of sense for guys like him and in similar situations. Not quite the Taylor Halls or the Alex Petrangelos. Like, not in those guys are not in this conversation, I don't think. But even if you jump into that second tier, I think that you might see a lot of that just because of the bizarre, uncharted waters that we're in right now.
Yeah, and just, I know we got to go, but from a Flames perspective, would you do one at four for Hamonic?
I do want it four for Hamonic.
Yeah, I think so too.
I do want it 4x5 or whatever for Brody. I'd bring them both back for another year. I don't know if I'm ready to commit long term to either, but just knowing how bizarre this year is going to be, I'd bring them back both for another year if they were up for it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I completely agree.
Interesting conversation.